We want to thank our sponsor, Great Western Bank, a proud supporter of the Wildcast podcast. At Great Western Bank, they focus on serving family-owned businesses and their overall financial needs. Whether your company needs increased working capital, equipment or SBA financing, purchasing or renovating a building or construction financing, Great Western Bank has the expertise to work through your specific financial needs. Visit the Great Western Bank branch on Campbell between Glen and Fort Lowell or call 520-325-1135 to talk to any of the business bankers about your specific needs. Member FDIC.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. It's the very first Wildcast podcast of the new year and of the new decade. I'm Justin Spears here with Bruce Pascoe and Alec White, and we are a part of the Arizona Daily Star team. And before every Arizona home football and basketball game, we always come out to Frog and Firkin. They share their space and they allow us to talk some U of A sports. And guys, I'm excited because now we're heading into Pac-12 play. Arizona Wildcats facing ASU this Saturday at home, the 25th ranked Arizona Wildcats. Guys, now that we're heading into Pac-12 play, you've heard Sean Mueller talk about the team and where they stand right now. What jumps out to you when you look at this Arizona squad?
Go ahead, Bruce.
I think, you know, as he said yesterday, I think it's a lot of the same things. It's almost like two parts of the non-conference season, one where they were that super efficient, free-flowing, happy team at home, and then, in December, not so good, losing three or four games, efficiency went out the window. Miller's complaining about quick shots, and here we are, you know, after a two-week break, wondering which way are they going to go?
Yeah. Where do you stand, Alec?
Look at it, you know, one of two ways is, you know, they're 10-3. They're still in the top 25. That's, you know, nothing to be mad about. But the three top opponents that Arizona's played, they haven't beaten, and they've also looked at they've looked their worst playing the best teams. And yeah, you can say we can attribute that, oh, it's off games, you know, they're freshmen. But you have to have some level of concern, you know, if, you know, for the Wildcats going into Pac-12 play, that they haven't played up to their expectations against these top-level teams. And now we're going into a time where you can't have too many off nights going forward. So it's going to be interesting to see. Mm-hmm.
Now, you mentioned losing to really good teams. They did lose to a Baylor squad who's looked pretty damn good so far this season. They've also lost to now a number one ranked Gonzaga team who was in a little bit of trouble last night against Portland.
The Pilots.
Down by seven at halftime. But they came back and won. And those were two very good losses. But the St. John's loss, that's the one that I really look at and say that just it wasn't a good loss for them, because St. John's lost to ASU earlier this season. And ASU lost to 40 by St. Mary's. I mean, they've looked very inconsistent this year. So I think, you know, that loss to end non-conference play, that really hurt Arizona entering Pac-12 play. But, you know, Sean Mueller mentioned the three things that Arizona needs to work on, almost kind of like Arizona's New Year's resolution. Defensive rebounding, fouling, which Sean Mueller said they foul at an absurd rate. It's stupid, and that's actually a real quote.
It's a quote.
And
stupid shots.
Stupid shots.
Loves them.
I'm pretty sure Sean Mueller has said the word circus about six or seven times this year. What do you think about those three things that Sean Mueller talked about?
Well, I think it's a little bit of the conflict in this team. He's recruited players who love to play in the open court, especially the guards Manning and Green, and I think he wants to let them go a little bit, but you know, it's not really been his nature to have super up tempo teams, and then when you see that sometimes they're not shooting well, and Green's stats, frankly, 32% from five. From three, you know, that's not what he wanted. He basically said yesterday, if you're shooting 32%, I can make the case that you should never shoot that shot. He might have been talking about Josh Green there. I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
But the fact is that he's willing to let him go to a point, and only to a point, and so there's a conflict of, you know, that they need to work the ball around. And you saw Chase Jeter said yesterday, the ball has to touch the paint. If it doesn't, you know, that's not working for us. And are they going to buy into that fully? Is that the best thing for this team? You know, all these things remain to be seen.
I was kind of surprised at Sean Miller benching Dylan Smith and Ira Lee in the second half against St. John's, because, you know, if you need defense, if you need rebounding, I mean, those two guys are, you know, some of the first couple guys you think of right away. Dylan Smith is probably the best rebounding guard on Arizona right now. He's also long. He's a pretty solid wing defender. Ira Lee, he's got that pit bull mentality. I was really surprised at the fact that Sean Miller benched those two guys in the second half against St. John's.
Yeah, I think I was too. I thought you could make a case that, you know, maybe if he benches them for the first 4 minutes and then plays them and they're angry at themselves and they come back and play hard, maybe Arizona wins that game. I mean, it could have been like that. But, you know, clearly Miller saw something. He just wasn't going to put up with them anymore. And, you know, and that was Smith's turning the ball over four times in the first half. Lee, he wouldn't say why he pulled out Lee, but I mean, all this talk about rebounding, and I'm sure that had something to do with it, or maybe there was a missed defensive assignment, who knows, but that's really unusual with Lee that he would do that, because Lee's been one of his most trustworthy players, you know, gives everything he has all the time, and for him to let Miller down is a little bit puzzling. Mm-hmm.
And the way we asked Sean Miller about this yesterday, and he gave a long-winded 4-minute answer.
Talked about Alabama football.
Talked about Alabama football, guys playing for pride. I'm not quite sure what he was trying to get at, but I think the main message was that the way Dylan Smith and Ira Lee were playing in the first half of St. John's was not representative of what he wants to see at Arizona basketball. And he had enough and just decided, hey, you can't play the way we have to play as a team. You're not playing at all.
Absolutely.
So, maybe, hopefully by now, they've received the message, and Miller said yesterday that he thinks they have received that message and will play, you know, much better moving forward. But, you know, it's uncharacteristic to see two guys that have been in this program now for 3 years be benched like that, because, you know, maybe it's a freshman that gets benched like this, but you don't expect Ira Lee or Dylan Smith, two hardworking guys, to be benched like that.
Absolutely.
Well, I think, I think, though, that he may have been speaking also to the guards, Manning and Green, a little bit, and maybe Dylan Smith to some extent on the shooting, because it seemed like he was talking about the stupid shooting. Is that a good shot for Arizona? And then he went into that whole thing about Alabama football, and those guys want to play for their team, and he kept saying, team, 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 and, you know, I thought, you know, and this is not terribly unusual for him this time of year. You get into Pac-12, guys start thinking about the draft stock, where are they going to go in the spring? And maybe he's trying to guard against that, or maybe he sees a little bit of that starting and he wants to make sure it stops and these guys stay focused on playing for Arizona. And, you know, that's potentially troubling, of course, if it gets that way. He's had some teams that do tend to splinter after January and others that put it aside.
Mm-hmm. And you bring up a good point about benching freshmen. Bruce, correct me if I'm wrong here, and Alec, you can correct me if I'm wrong too. Didn't he bench Stanley Johnson his freshman year? Wasn't there like a stretch of games where Stanley Johnson was coming off the bench or he wasn't getting as many minutes?
I think there was. I can't remember off the top of my head. I don't know if he benched him for a starting position, maybe. But he definitely, there was something there. But Stanley started the season pretty well. Won the MVP in Maui, and, you know, it's possible. Yeah, I'd have to go back and look. It's hard to remember that stuff off the top of my head.
But how he responded right after that.
Yeah.
That's what really jumps out to you. And I think if Dylan Smith, a guy who's starting, I think maybe we can see him react to getting benched. And Sean Miller's talked about those two guys, Ira Lee and Dylan Smith specifically, how they responded. Before we get into the weeds of this Arizona-ASU game, because this is a big game on Saturday, I'm excited for it at McHale Center. I want to talk about a story that our colleague John Gold put out on Tucson.com. By the way, Bruce, I feel like John Gold has been a story factory.
He still lives here in Tucson, doesn't he? I feel his vibes or something. But no, he's doing great stuff, and we're lucky to have him contributing, absolutely.
But Gold put out something about the biggest what-ifs in U of A sports history. And since we're only talking about Arizona basketball right now, I want to ask you guys, what is the big what-if in Arizona basketball from this past decade?
Well, I think, you know, John absolutely hit on it. The number one thing that stuck out to me is Brandon Ashley's injury. You know, you can say, well, Nick Johnson could have got that shot off or whatever, the offensive foul against Wisconsin and, you know, those kind of things. But those kind of things happen. The injury to Brandon Ashley came at a time when that team was unbelievable. And I think it was February 1st or something, early, you know, mid-season, in middle of the Pac-12 season, and that team, you know, could have been a national championship team. You know, you just wonder what would have happened if he was there, and maybe those games wouldn't have gone down to the wire. Maybe Arizona would have won by 5 or 6, and, you know, wouldn't have been an issue. So that's the thing to me, and those teams couldn't get it done, and, you know, that 1 year without him, that was a killer.
Alec, what's your what if?
I mean,
it's hard to continue.
It's hard,
that.
Yeah. you kind of start at Brandon Ashley, and then everything else is, you know, kind of below that. But, you know, you can point to the Nick Johnson shot. But what if, you know, more recent for me, what if Arizona is able to beat Xavier in the Sweet 16? I know Gonzaga, you know, went on to, you know, the Final Four that year, but Arizona played Gonzaga pretty tough in that first matchup in December. It was a neutral site game in Staples Center. Arizona lost that game to Gonzaga, but, you know, they were down, you know, a couple key guys. You know, what if Arizona doesn't lose that, you know, Sweet 16 game to Xavier? Do they end up getting past the Zags and get into a Final Four? It's not obviously not as strong as the Brandon Ashley case, but, I mean, I think you can make, you know, a strong push for that had they not collapsed against Xavier, maybe Sean Miller has a Final Four berth.
Yeah, that's a good point, because that was lined up for them to make the Final Four, because you're right, they might have matched up well with Gonzaga had they gotten there. Those games were in San Jose. It was a Thursday, Saturday, just like a Pac-12 weekend. You know, they had their Bay Area fans there and just slipped away.
And the Final Four was in Phoenix.
Yeah, I mean, everything was lined up.
It was all lined up.
And it was the 20-year anniversary of the 1997 National Championship team.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's just that Xavier game didn't go down to the wire, so you don't think of it like that necessarily, but that's a good point. And then the other thing that at least with basketball, that John pointed out was the 11 team, and whether Kyle Fogg should have shot or whether, you know, Jamel Horn might have made that three, but frankly, that team wasn't expected to be there, and it was just such a big upset that they were even in position to have a chance to get to the Final Four was pretty amazing.
I'm trying to think of what ifs, because the Kyle Fogg one was mine. What if Jamel Horn makes that three-pointer in the corner? I mean, Arizona's going to the Final Four, and, I mean, they might have won the national championship that year because Kemba Walker was on another planet. You eliminate him. I mean, I'm not saying it's smooth sailings for Arizona, but you kind of like their chances.
Yeah, I mean, right. I think the key was, you're right, Kemba Walker being out, because he was just, I mean, that was one of the postseason stretches best postseason stretches I've ever seen from an individual leading a team like that, what he did through the Big East and then the tournament.
More so than Carmelo Anthony? At
that
Syracuse?
Was a while ago, but I mean, I think relative to expectations, maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think anybody thought UConn. I mean, didn't they have to win, four games in the Big East just to get going? And I don't know. It was amazing, amazing run. But anyway, stranger things have happened than teams like that 11 Arizona team making the Final Four. So it wouldn't have been a complete shock, but, you know, relative to the fact that that team was really still rebuilding. If you strip away Momo Jones and Derek Williams from that team, that was just a rebuilding team that, you know, was lucky to be in the postseason. Mm.
Another what if that I thought of, what if Nick Johnson decided to stay for his senior year at Arizona?
Oh, yeah.
Think about that team with T.J. McConnell, Nick Johnson, Stanley Johnson, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, and Brandon Ashley would have came back from his foot injury, Caleb Tarzewski. I mean, we're looking at a pretty stacked Arizona team that year, and that probably would have been enough to get them over the hump. That was Sam Decker in Wisconsin in the Elite Eight. I also look at, you know, you talk about tournament losses, Alec. What if Arizona were to somehow get past Buffalo in 2018? You got the best player, arguably the best player in the country, DeAndre Ayton. and you can't even get past Buffalo. Now, they would have played Kentucky.
They would have gotten blown out by Kentucky.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, the way Arizona was playing at that time, I mean, you were in Las Vegas for that Pac-12 tournament.
I was.
That was unbelievable.
That was the biggest thing. It wasn't so much that they had a first-round upset to a team that was better than anyone realized in Buffalo, but the fact that they were playing so well in that Pac-12 tournament, and they just came out and, you know, appeared to lay an egg against Buffalo, and, you know, Aiden didn't touch the ball probably as much as he could. There was a number of problems in that game. It was just weird. It wasn't a fluke. It was just weird.
Yeah. All right, before we really get into Arizona ASU, first glimpse of Pac-12 play did not disappoint.
Pac-12 after dark.
ESPN decided to cut off the Oregon game, in which they lost. Number four team going down to Colorado. Shout out to McKinley Wright. McKinley Wright has always been one of the names that everybody talks about in the Pac-12, and he definitely showed why he is an all Pac-12 guard last night. He finished with 25 points and 8 assists. I mean, that's what you want to see out of your guard. But then UCLA going up to UW and having a game-winning shot, that was, you know, a game that everybody looked at in the Pac-12. I don't know why I didn't watch the games that everybody else was watching. I was watching Cal Stanford, and that was one of the worst first. Bruce is shaking his head at me. I was watching Cal Stanford. That was one of the worst first halves of basketball I have ever seen. With like 10 minutes left in the first half, the score was like 10-10. I couldn't believe it. It was so boring. It was brick after brick, turnovers.
Oh, man.
Like, there was seriously like a few straight possessions where it was like a travel, a carry, a double dribble. You know, two missed free throws. Like, it was just bad basketball all around.
I don't know what you were watching. I mean,
Oregon, after dark.
Oregon, Colorado, until it got cut off with 3 minutes to go in crunch time. That was a fantastic game.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the Ducks really were out of it for almost the entire game. It was like midway through the second half, and they hadn't hit a three. Pritchard wasn't playing great. You know, Colorado was, you know, McKinley Wright, as you mentioned, you know, he was on fire. And Oregon was down by 15. Then they have this furious comeback. And then Colorado just puts the hammer down and closes it out. McKinley Wright had a big three-pointer. That was just a fun game. Bill Walton and Dave Pasch were on the call. So you just had these, you know, just some fun vibes going around for the first day of Pac-12.
Yeah, but I will say, though, in my mind, that was not a surprise at all. I've ranked Colorado most of the season. I picked them number two in the conference. I think they're really good. I mean, they've got everybody back, plus some guys that were injured last year. McKinley Wright's a terrific leader and point guard, and that home advantage there in Boulder doesn't get talked about enough. And even though it gets talked about, it's huge, especially when that place is packed like it was last night. And I also think it speaks to the fact that Arizona really got a break this year and that they don't have to go to Colorado or Oregon. I mean, Colorado or Utah, excuse me. Utah beating Oregon State last night was another significant thing. I mean, they can win those games. Oregon State is really good, and they got handled there a little bit too. So Arizona gets a break there, and again, the biggest surprise, as you alluded to, of course, was UCLA winning, and that also just sends a message of how crazy this league could be.
So after a night that we saw the first night of Pac-12 play, does seeding matter in the Pac-12 tournament? Is it kind of all bets are off?
I mean, I think you still want one of those top four seeds to not play the extra game.
You don't want to play on Wednesday.
You don't want to play on Wednesday. You want to play Thursday. But, I mean, after, in terms of one, two, three, or four, we'll still have to wait and see. But at this moment, I don't think it would matter too much because it'll, you know, realistically, it'll probably be a combination of Oregon, Washington, Colorado, maybe Arizona as the 1, 2, 3, 4 in whatever order. But UCLA had a great, you know, showcase. So I don't know. You want a top four seed, but after that, I don't know if it matters too much.
That's true, of course. I mean, coaches would prefer that, but you have seen Oregon and Colorado make four-game runs. And if you have the depth and the confidence, it can happen. It's not a big – I don't think it's that big – well, I mean, especially if you can get the 5th or 6th at least, then you're guaranteed to play the 11th or 12th in that first game on Wednesday, and you can kind of have that, – that can kind of be your warm-up game. And then you can go in if you have some depth and you know, get a little confidence going there. It is possible. We've seen it happen a couple times now. So it's not that bad. I don't think you want to slip much past the 5 line, especially this year, because, you know, say if Washington State's sitting there in that 11th spot, which they're projected to be, you know, they're better, and, you know, they could be a little bit scary. But you know, we'll see. I mean, because I do think that those – top 6 spots could be really up for grabs. Arizona could finish anywhere from 1 to 6, really.
Which Pac-12 team has been the biggest surprise for you, whether a non-conference play or just what you saw from the other night in the first night of Pac-12 play? I think Stanford has really been surprising, because they were, and now they're 12-2? 12-3.
They're tricky.
I think they have 2 losses.
They played a pretty soft schedule, and it wasn't until they played Kansas where it was really a tough game. They played them at home, and they just got hammered. In fact, frankly, embarrassed. They didn't even score for the first 8 minutes of that game.
12-2, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was – they're a little bit weird that way. You know, UCLA, you could say they're surprising because they'd not been good until they beat Washington, but – that also wasn't a huge surprise, in that you have a huge clash with Mick Cronin taking over a bunch of guys who probably aren't quite the hard-nosed defenders guys that he wants. And, you know, maybe some of them are a little bit highly rated and still riding that. And, you know, they're just struggling to a new system and maybe not quite as talented as they believed.
All right, before we get into Arizona ASU and predict that game, let's do Pac-12 Pick'ems, Alec.
All right.
A basketball version of Pac-12 Pick'ems. Starting with the Saturday slate, Oregon versus Utah. Oregon was just upset by the Colorado Buffaloes. But Utah, I know they've struggled a little bit this year, but, I mean, that's a trap game right there for Oregon. Do you guys think the Ducks get it done, or do you think the Utes pull off the upset?
I'll go Oregon. I mean, coming off a loss, I feel, you know, they'll find a way to bounce back, but they're going into the Huntsman Center, Utah, in Utah. You know, they won yesterday, and they also beat Kentucky on a neutral site. But I don't know. It's so hard to pick these games right off the bat, because we're all getting used to how these teams are going to play each other. But right now, I'd give the edge to Oregon. I don't think they have 2 bad losses in a row.
Yeah, I agree. I don't. You know, that's going to be a down the wire game. But I don't think the Huntsman Center is quite as tough to play as Colorado. And Utah's got a lot more newer players. They're obviously far exceeded expectations, but Oregon's very veteran. And it's hard to see them losing twice, although it wouldn't be a shock to anybody, for anybody to get swept in the mountains this year.
Yeah, I got the Ducks. And you say it's going to go down to the wire, Bruce?
I think it could, yeah. I mean, I could see it. Certainly a one-two possession game, absolutely.
I got the Ducks by 10. I think this is a game where, you know, Utah might keep it close, but then Peyton Pritchard, the experience that he has in games like this on the road, I think the Ducks eventually pull away behind his efforts. UCLA against Washington State, 5 p.m. tip-off Mountain Time on Pac-12 Networks. UCLA had a big win against UW. I think they get it done as well against Washington State. And quite frankly, I think UCLA wins big as well, because Washington State's kind of struggled
Are we keeping score here?
Yeah, we are keeping score here.
Because I was going to say, I think Washington State maybe, I go with them as a little bit of an upset pick there, just because I think UCLA is, you know, maybe to get some momentum or whatever, but I just think they're a little bit, I don't know if they can sustain that for a couple games. And then Washington State going in there, I think that's the kind of game where you know, a lot more fans can come out. They have a real problem attending, getting fans to go to that place. But maybe on is it Saturday night? Or
yeah,
so, yeah. You know, people might make a thing of it. UCLA still has a name brand. You know, there'll be some excitement there. And Washington State's, they got some guys, and you know, they've got a new system and a new coach who's again exceeded expectations. So that could be interesting at least.
I'll go UCLA. Nice. I like riding the Bruins early on the Pac-12. Yeah. I think they get another one.
Well, and this will be good for the Pac-12 as well. Can you guys both agree if UCLA is doing better, Pac-12 is doing good?
Yep.
So going ahead to the Sunday slate, Oregon State versus Colorado. Tip-off is set for 4 p.m. Mountain Time on ESPNU. Who do you got, the Beavers or the Buffaloes?
Colorado, they're, you know, they have to get over this, the big euphoria of last night, but that'll help that the game is on Sunday, and, you know, again, I just think they know they've got a soft early schedule, or at least a home-friendly early schedule, and they've got to get off to a jump here if they're going to compete for this conference, so I think they'll take care of
it. Yeah, I'll go Colorado at home by a couple possessions.
Yeah, as much as I like Wayne Tinkle and Trace Tinkle, you know, being an all Pac-12 kind of player, I think Colorado, McKinley Wright, Tyler Bay, they just have way too much talent on their team for Oregon State to handle. USC versus Washington. This is a late game on Sunday, 8 p.m. Mountain Time on FS1. Trojans in Seattle taking on the Huskies. What do you got, SC or UW?
What a terrific front court matchup that game is going to be. It's just going to be fun to watch. But I think you got to take UW there because they're home, and again, they've been playing pretty well, and then now they've got a little motivation there. They can't go 0-2 at home to start the season. I don't think they will.
Yeah, I'll take the Huskies as well. Got to bounce back, and I think, you know, they ran into some foul trouble yesterday. Jaden McDaniels had, you know, an off game against UCLA, so I think he bounces back and gets the Huskies back in the win column.
I think this team is way too talented to lose two consecutive home games. Jaden McDaniels, like you said, you know, even some of the transfer guards that they have. What's his name? The guy from
Quade Green.
Quade Green, yeah. Very talented. I just think, again, same reason I picked Colorado to beat Oregon State. Washington is a team that's probably going to finish in the top quarter of the Pac-12. So I think I'm going to go with the Huskies at home. Although I do think USC keeps it closer than people think. All right, now the game everybody wants to hear about. ASU visiting Arizona, the 25th-ranked Wildcats. Enter Pac-12 play, riding a two-game skid. But I think Arizona gets it done against ASU at home because they have the home factor. They're looking to bounce back after their two losses. And it's the first game of Pac-12 play. They've had a whole week and a half, really, or a week, just to get ready, get their bodies right. Chase Jeter said he didn't do much basketball activities. Now, there could be a little bit of a rust factor, but they've been practicing all week leading up to this game. So maybe a rust, maybe not. Regardless, I like the Wildcats at home.
Arizona's lost two in a row now to ASU. I mean, they got swept last year, so you got to win this one at home to start out Pac-12 play. I think they're going to come back refreshed after this break. ASU, I don't know which ASU team's going to show up. They might be down Romello White, their big front court guy who averages a double-double, would, you know, be a heavy presence on the glass. I think he plays, but I don't know how effective he is. And I think that's able, you know, Zeke Nagy and Chase Jeter are able to get a couple extra, you know, second chance shots for Arizona. And I like the Wildcats to start Pac-12 play with a win over ASU. I'll take Arizona by 6 points.
But the thing about Romello White is he's a little undersized for a big guy, but he's physical. And yep. And that's a battle that Arizona doesn't want, because if he's going up against Chase Jeter, I mean, Chase Jeter talked about defensive rebounding and how that was a point of emphasis. This is a statement game for Chase Jeter to see if defensive rebounding has been a point of emphasis. But Romello White is a big guy. By big, I mean he's built like a linebacker, and he's undersized, and he's a dog. And it's going to be a rough night if they allow Romello White to get going on the boards.
Another fun matchup is Nico Mannion versus Jalen House.
Two
Phoenix guys. They played a couple times during, you know, their high school ball. House went to Shadow Mountain, and Nico Mannion Pinnacle. And Nico, I think, you know, had a game winner. It was like a back and forth game, and Nico had a, you know, just a bank half court shot to
he didn't call
bank, but it went in. So I mean, those two guys have been growing up playing against each other, you know, for the last several years. So I think it'll be an interesting guard matchup out there.
Yeah, I think if White is limited or out, that's, you know, that really helps Arizona. But I think even if he plays, and he is an amazing, especially both sides of the boards really. But offensive rebounding, you know, has been an issue for Arizona, and he's that I'm looking at here, he gets the ball back 12.2% of the time ASU misses that goes into his hands. That's pretty significant. But regardless of that, I think if he plays, you know, one of Arizona State's other strengths is their defense and their aggressiveness, turning you over. Arizona's very good at handling the ball, you know, and being at home and having plenty of time to reset things. I think they'll be fine, or not fine, you know, not fine isn't easy, but I think they can handle it, and they should be able to win.
Kind of an X factor for me is Alonzo Verge, their guard, ASU's guard, who came off the bench against St. Mary's and scored 43 points. Scored 43 points off the bench. It was one of the weirdest box scores I've ever seen. Only three players for ASU scored against St. Mary's. One of them was Alonzo Verge, who had 43. I had to keep refreshing my laptop to see if the box score is right. I thought it was like, you know how stats broadcast sometimes has a glitch. But no, the guy actually scored 43 points coming off the bench. He's been a nice addition to ASU, and yeah, he's gonna be a key factor for them on the road.
Really good scorer, not great 3-point shooter, but good in mid range floaters. Kind of a little bit, you know, like Manning can score in different ways. He can as well, and he's been super aggressive to do that against St. Mary's. You know, as Miller pointed out yesterday, it's hard for anybody to score 43 points against St. Mary's sometimes.
Yeah,
a whole team.
Maybe an X factor for Arizona, we haven't really touched on him, is Stone Gettings. He'll be playing tomorrow, coming back off of that facial fracture. And I know he's a bench player. He doesn't play a ton of minutes, but Arizona still looked much better with him on the court than without him. All of their losses have come with him, you know, out, you know, with that concussion. Maybe does he wear the face mask tomorrow? Does he not? I don't know. I know he wants to get out of it, but he'll be playing tomorrow. He's going to be a good, solid rebounding option, and he can also step out, hit a couple threes. You know, he's able to regain the form that he had early in the year. I mean, you could be looking at a couple extra buckets for him.
And he's a pretty good passer, too.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the point guard nobody wants to talk about at Arizona. You know, when he gets the ball on the elbow or the high post or even around the basket, he finds guys like Zignaggi. He finds, you know, other bigs, Ira Lee, Chase Jeter. He gets a lot of people involved. I mean, he could just do a little bit of everything. That's a good X factor, Alec.
Yeah, I'm surprised that doesn't get talked more about. That he is kind of almost a point forward in some sense like that. And that was the number that jumped out at me. His Cornell stats is he was really good at that. They went through him a lot, and you know he's smart. He's in the right place. He's crafty. I mean, he's an Ivy League graduate, so you know there's something about it that translates on the floor. I mean, you know. And he's tough too. He's you know, I think as we know on the play he got hurt, it was because he had basically fooled a guy under the basket. The guy went up, came down, and he just happened to come down on Stone's face or whatever. And you know, to unfortunately for him, but you know, really does give him a little bit of everything, which is funny. Funny to say that about somebody who's only averaging 13 minutes a game, but it really is pretty significant, those little pieces he gives you.
Arizona, ASU. It's going to be a good one Saturday night. Make sure you follow the Wildcaster on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Also, download the Wildcaster app. It's free and available on the App Store and Google Play. We have tons of good stuff on there, from podcasts, videos, stories, photo galleries, you name it. It's all on the Wildcaster app, and it's free. Don't need a subscription to the Arizona Daily Star. Download it on the App Store and Google Play. Also, make sure you subscribe to the Wildcast podcast on Apple Podcasts. Arizona taking on ASU, 7:30 p.m. tip-off at McHale Center this Saturday. You can watch that on Pac-12 Networks, but make sure you follow the Wildcast for all the live coverage. That'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast podcast. For Bruce, for Alec, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening. Big shout-out to Frog and Ferkin. We want to thank our sponsor, Great Western Bank, a proud supporter of the Wildcast podcast. At Great Western Bank, they focus on serving family-owned businesses and their overall financial needs. Whether your company needs increased working capital, equipment or SBA financing, purchasing or renovating a building or construction financing, Great Western Bank has the expertise to work through your specific financial needs. Visit the Great Western Bank branch on Campbell between Glen and Fort Lowell, or call 520-325-1135 to talk to any of the business bankers about your specific needs. Member FDIC.